Hey, fellow Moonwalkers, it's Rob from Cigar Story Gets Podcast. Want to know why we've been working with Moonwalker for the past 3 years? Let me tell you. Third-party tested, it's hemp-derived, they have the highest quality and the best prices. They're made right here in the United States. They have a full-time customer service, money-back guarantee, and a customer service rating of 98%. Not to mention, they taste great. Moonwalker was born out of the curiosity to push the boundaries of what is truly possible with hemp. By combining award-winning terpenes and natural flavors in unique custom blends, they explore new dimensions of taste, balance, and euphoria. Follow us at CS Idiots Podcast on Instagram, hit the partners link in the bio, and be sure to use promo code CSIPOD01 for 15% off of your next purchase. Hey, what's going on, everybody? Welcome to another edition of your favorite podcast, Cigar Store Idiots. I am Rob. I am running solo tonight. You guys just bear with us. We got a couple of things that we're working through right now as far as scheduling goes. I started a new job. We all know Arlo and Cousin Johnny are doing a lot of, I guess they're getting closer to the end of the year, wrapping up school and the things that they do. But we didn't want to leave you hanging. We wanted to give you something to talk about, something to listen to. And I had ran across this story and I wanted to share it with you guys. I think it's pretty interesting. This is a pretty bad dude. Probably the most famous Texas Ranger of all time. And I'm talking about Frank Hamer. I'm going to go through his story a little bit, where he started out, how he got started in law enforcement and the things that he did while he was in law enforcement. And, most famously known for taking down Bonnie and Clyde. So, if you guys would just settle in and we'll get right into this one. He was sometimes referred to as the greatest lawman of the 20th century. Former Texas Ranger Frank Hamer. He not only took out Bonnie and Clyde, but he was ruthless on a certain white supremacist group called the KKK and their lynch mobs. His life was a tapestry of daring pursuits, fueled by unwavering commitments to justice. Again, called the greatest lawman of the 20th century. He made no bones about it. He was pretty ruthless. This guy, he had got into, I believe, more than 50 gunfights over his career. He was probably, not probably, but he was shot only four times during that those gunfights. And he said that he had estimated that he had probably killed anywhere between 53 to 70 people. So he was the Dirty Harry before Dirty Harry was cool. He also ended up in the Texas Rangers Hall of Fame, not to be confused with the baseball team. So his career with the Rangers spanned nearly three decades, so I'm facing off against more than just notorious gangsters. Again, he attacked the lynch mobs of the Ku Klux Klan in Texas. And he also, in 1948, he helped former Texas Governor Coke Stevenson blow the lid off of a fraudulent ballot incident they were having, which favored Lyndon B. Johnson. Kind of funny how that was going on back then, too. But it was, without saying, his career was not controversial. And we'll go all the way back to the early life of Frank Hamer. Francis Augustus Hamer was born March 17th of 1884 in Fairview, Texas, to Franklin Augustus, a blacksmith, and Lou Emma Hamer. The couple had six sons, four of them who would later go on to be Texas Rangers. Hamer attended school up into the sixth grade before ending his education. Still at an early age, he displayed a high level of intelligence and remarkably had a superior photographic memory. And he was very interested in Texas history, the Texas Rangers, and also was a big Native American buff in his region. He really liked to study the Native Americans as well. As a young boy, Hamer worked for his father's blacksmith shop. He picked up work as a wrangler. Surprisingly, how fast that he had got into law enforcement. By 1905, he was working on a ranch in West Texas, and he began to manage and to catch horse thieves. When he was handed the man over to the local sheriff, Dudley S. Barker, he was so impressed with him being so young, and he encouraged him to enlist with the Rangers. A year later, Hamer actually followed up on the advice, and his historic rise to stardom with the Rangers had begun. He officially joined the Rangers in 1906. His first 2 years were kind of relatively unmarkable. Spent a lot of time patrolling around the Mexican border. And then in 1908, he quit for the first time for a brief stint as a city marshal in, I believe it looks like, Navasota, Texas, where he remained there for about 3 years. In his short time, he had managed to bring that once lawless city under back to order. Largely, the group that was taken over was a racist group known as the White Man's Union, which had essentially ran the town for years. So he got law and order, kind of got everything back on the right track there. In 1911, Hamer changed courses once again, this time working as a special investigator for Houston Mayor Horace Baldwin Rice. For 3 years into that, in 1914, Hamer had become the deputy sheriff of Kimball County and thought he would only remain there for a year before resigning to rejoin the Rangers, only to quit once again in 1917 and work as a special inspector for a Cattle Raisers Association of Texas. So he's quit the Texas Rangers three times, but they always welcome him back. So he's got his hands in all kinds of stuff. During that time, Hamer was briefly married to a woman named Molly Cameron. They divorced in 1915. The same year, Hamer decided to rejoin the Rangers. I guess he would rather get shot at than be married to her. I don't know. So May 1917, Hamer married again, this time to Ida Gladys Johnson, the widow of a man named Ed Sims. This was all kind of ironic because a year prior, Ida and her brother were charged with Ed Sims' murder, which ultimately led into a shootout between Sims' brother-in-law, Gus McMeans, and Hamer. So Hamer was involved with that. The gunfight ended with Hamer wounded and McMeans dead of a gunshot through the heart. In 1918, Hamer joined Company F in Brownsville, Texas, mostly helping to combat illegal drug and weapon smuggling. But at the same time, the investigation to the Texas Ranger was underway, led by State Representative Jose Tomas Canales, who was actually levying 19 charges against the Ranger for racial violence. Needless to say, Hamer did not react well to that news. With the Mexican Revolution happening just south of the border, anti-Mexican sentiment was on the rise in the United States, and according to the Texas Historical Association, this had extended to the Texas Rangers. So they were not. That was a group of people that did not get along. Canales actually appeared before a joint committee of the Senate at the House for an investigation of this Texas State Ranger Force in 1919, bringing up 19 charges against the Texas Rangers for their racial violence. During the proceeding, Canales mentioned that Hamer had confronted him over an investigation in December of 1918. He also accused Hamer of stalking and threatening him, saying, "His presence was made known to me." After Canales reported this threat, William Sterling, a future Texas Ranger captain, defended Hamer's record, though he admitted Hamer usually followed through with his threats. Still, the incident did little to slow Hamer's career trajectory, and soon he found himself the senior captain of the Texas Rangers. Again, not the baseball team. Hamer's his final years as a Ranger, of course, over the next decade, Hamer would continue to make a name for himself, leading a fight in Texas against the Ku Klux Klan and saving around 15 people from lynch mobs. If you aren't familiar with the lynch mob, just a group of guys. I mean, Django comes to mind when they try to go find Django and the doctor. They're out there with their hoods. It would be a good soundbite right here. He helped put an end to what was essentially become a murder-for-hire ring started by none other than the Texas Bankers Association. This is where it gets a little crazy. It's always been corrupt, people. It's not just right now in 2024. It was corrupt in 1919. According to the Wilson County Historical Society, the association had begun offering $5,000 rewards for dead bank robbers. Not 1 cent for ones that were alive, only dead. Hamer argued that this had... all it did was uncivilized, crooked cops and set up low-level ideas, and they would just take would-be bank robbers just to kill them and collect the reward money. So there you see that was a problem. That was the problem there. The Bankers Association... any man could be inducted to participate in this bank robbery or to be killed. The response Hamer penned throughout an impassioned expose and handed out copies of the state capitol. His efforts led to a massive investigation, but no punitive measures for bad actors. However, Bankers Association did amend an award criteria to be for there to be robbers dead or alive. So... nobody got in trouble for setting up these sanctions. These dirty cops were finding would-be bank robbers and killing them and going and collecting money. Just another way to cheat the system. Again, 2024, 1918. It's all the same. Hamer then retired again from the Rangers in 1993, telling the press that when they elected a woman governor, I knew I was going to quit. That's true. That's a true quote. So... of course, Hamer wouldn't stay out of the law game for too long. The two criminals that drove him out of retirement was two bank robbers by the name of Clyde Barrow and Bonnie Parker. They had begun stirring up quite a buzz in the media. Although he wasn't with the Rangers anymore, he was hired as a special investigator for the Texas prison system, specifically tasked to bring down the Barrow gang. And folks, it took him about 2 months to figure out what was going on, their pattern, and how they were doing things. It took him 2 months, and he made a whopping $180 each month that he was on the case. He mapped out the locations of the Barrow gang's crimes. Hamer discovered that they had essentially been moving in a large circle across central USA with a few key anchor points. This way, he learned to predict where their next move and next stop probably would be. He had begun to understand the way that Clyde Barrow's mind was working, and he set up a plan. An officer must know the habits of the outlaw, how he thinks, and how he will act in different situations. According to the Texas Rangers, A Century of Frontier Defense by Walter Prescott Webb, when I began to understand Clyde Barrow's mind, I felt I was making some progress. Then, on May 21st, 1934, a posse of six officers led by Hamer met on a rural road in Gibbsland, Louisiana, and set up the ambush for Bonnie and Clyde. Police enlisted the father of Henry Methven, an accomplice of Bonnie and Clyde, to set up the ambush. He waited on the side of the road as bait, and the infamous criminals took it, slowing the vehicle down to meet him. But before they could even get out of the car, all the law enforcement opened fire, killing the criminal couple almost instantly. To ensure the pair was dead, the officers continued to rain bullets onto the outlaws, firing off 130 rounds and dotting the car with over 100 bullet holes. The tale has become subject of many films, books, television shows, but it actually served as the highlight of Frank Hamer's illustrious career in law enforcement. Although he continued to work, his career never quite reached the height as it did during the Bonnie and Clyde saga. In his final years, the 1930s, Hamer worked mostly as a strikebreaker on behalf of an oil and shipping company. When World War II began in Europe in 1939, Hamer was among the 50 retired Texas Rangers who offered up help in the United Kingdom to fend off the Nazi invasion. This is something that the United States government did not approve of, but you know, he's not really doesn't really strike me as the kind of guy that's going to ask for permission from a lot of people. So after the war, 1948, Hamer was once again asked to pick up his Rangers duties. This time, however, he was hired by former Governor Coke Stevenson during the Senate race to accompany him to Texas Bank in Alice to examine alleged fraud ballots cast in the favor of Stevenson's opponent, Lyndon Baines Johnson. When the two arrived, Hamer's presence alone was enough to clear out the crowds to make room for him. It was a big showcase to have him there. While the investigation ultimately didn't win Stevenson the election, it was still a notorious event in American history. So, again, 1948? It's all the same in the politics. So, Hamer finally retired a year later. However, he was only able to enjoy this retirement for a short 4 years before suffering a heat stroke in 1953. While he survived, his health never fully recovered, and then he died of a heart attack in 1955. In the end, he was buried near his son, Billy, who died in World War II. That's Frank Hamer, folks. He's hands down one of the most famous, infamous figures in law enforcement that there is. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to try to find some of these stories in history, go over some of these things that maybe I didn't know this story. So maybe I can find some stuff that you guys don't know about, and we can discuss it here on this podcast. Again, stay patient with us. We are getting close to the summer. We'll be able to get back on a normal schedule with everybody. But until then, I will keep reaching out to you guys and giving you something to talk about. So I appreciate you listening. I hope you guys have a good day, and we'll see you next week. Take care.